This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today is Anders Osborne.
My sweet little baby did me wrong again. Heaven's my sweet angel. Spend the night with my friend. Yeah, I got stone drunk and naked. The foolishness.
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio Anders Osborne. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, John?
Great to see you and great to get a chance to talk shop with you here on Musicians Spotlight. And thank you again for making time to visit with us. AndersOsborne.com is the name of the website you can go to find out more about Anders and his music and his work. And Flowerbox, I believe, is the most recent recording. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Came out, I think, in August 16.
Okay, great. So where I want to start the interview is in, I don't know how to pronounce it correctly, Uddevalla?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, so this just brought Uddevalla, Sweden, into my world because I'd never heard of this before. That's where you're from originally. Take us there. Take listeners to Uddevalla and tell us about it.
I don't know much about it. I left when I was 7.
Okay.
I know it's a harbor town. I know my grandfather was a sailor from France that was adopted into a family over there. And Yeah, I think they build ships. That's all I know.
So at seven, you left. And then yeah. I'm trying to remember the chronology of your journey in terms of your
Yeah. Life. Well, it was some travel and some moving around, and then ended up in New Orleans in 85. And yeah, that's it.
Okay, no, wait, that's not it. Hold on, let's go back. Because this is really interesting that you did a little hitchhiking through Europe and around. Uh-huh. Let's talk about that. That's not something everybody does.
Well, it was, you know, it was, I don't know, just looking for stuff, looking for things within myself and in the world. I can't quite explain why and what I was doing, but I ended up moving around and then, yeah.
Some of the places you visited in that time.
Oh, used to be called Yugoslavia, Dubrovnik, Venice, Italy. I spent a few months on Crete in Greece. Cyprus. I lived a year in Israel. Went to Egypt.
So you're just glossing this over. Not many people, you know, live a life like that. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, but it is. But I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, glossing it over. But it's making it trivial. It shaped who I am. But yeah. I think everything shapes who you are. So I think in that case, it was more a matter of, I don't know. It's more an internal search, and where you are, it's not as relevant, I think. I mean, I've been a lot of places, and my musician career, you know, the my 30 years of playing music has taken me a lot of places. And I think most of the time you think about where to eat and where to sleep and restrooms and making sure you're socially accepted, and it's pretty basic. So to be honest with you, that's pretty much what I remember is figuring out where to sleep and which bush to lay under or which hostel to try to get into, where to find a job, same as I'm doing now. I mean, it's pretty much the same stuff.
All right, so in the course of that journey, when did music come into your life and become, you know, move to the forefront of what you wanted to do?
I had worked through my late teens, you know, as a dishwasher in New Orleans. I had worked as a kind of a maintenance guy on a horse farm in Folsom, which is a little bit north of the city. I've done some odd jobs. You know, I worked for a PA company for 2 years, and I had always played and written music, played on the streets quite a bit. But I think I was about 22, maybe 21, 22. It started to get difficult to do both things, which was to go work at night or to find gigs, spend time, you know, on the phone trying to, you know, get gigs from promoters and clubs at the same time as I had a day gig somewhere. So I made a decision to make it, you know, this is what I'm going to do.
Used to be silent, now I feel hollow. Getting out of swallow, this educated jive. Give me a reason to commit treason. And what I believe in, estimated pride. Make me a painter that lives on an island, housed by the ocean, gracefully old. Make me a captain of all my obsessions. Remove my possessions that clutters my soul. Me late. I used to be sexy, now everything vexes me. Nothing impresses me except getting paid. to make me a painter. They lived on an island, housed by the ocean, and gracefully old.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Anders Osborne. And at what point in that journey and the musical journey did you realize, hey, what I'm doing here is really connecting with folks? And maybe I'm onto something that's going to be more than just getting me from which town to the next. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think the connection wasn't made until I was in almost 25 years later, where I just got out of rehab and I had cleaned up, and the songs I started to write at that time. Actually, no, I think it started a little bit before then. I started to see, now I'm not talking about getting, you know, 1500 people to a club. Mm-hmm. That happened a lot sooner, or 250 people in a local pub or something. That happened sooner. But the connection where I understood that something that I said was not only necessary for me to say, but it was, you know, appreciated and connected with other people that were going through the same type of problems. And I think that was in my mid-40s.
That is really interesting, because I've asked that question to a lot of musicians and gotten all kinds of answers, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Most of them go back to a time earlier in their life, you know, whether they're kids or whether they're teenagers or young adults. Mm. And so interesting to hear you say, you talk about getting 1,500 people to a club. That doesn't happen all the time. So your people are coming and they are responding to music, but you don't really feel the kind of connection until you got sober.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. that's what happened. And I think the lyrical content changed, and the way I am in the present moment is different. So maybe other people connected prior to it, mm-hmm. but I think it was more about dance and the event itself. A very New Orleans sort of soaked environment. Even if I played in New York City or San Francisco, it'll be all about the, you know, hey, what's up, bruh? If you know what I'm saying.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And that becomes almost like, I wouldn't say a charade, but it's a great place to go to internally and mentally and spiritually to, like, just be carefree.
Yeah.
But the issues that I have been dealing with, you know, since sobriety, they're very different. They're very intense. They're very They leave me extremely insecure. They leave me vulnerable. They leave me open to other people's opinions in a very different way. And it also leaves me more capable of dealing with the things that I go through. And I think because of that, I sing differently. I stand differently. I perform louder if I want, if I demand attention. Mm-hmm. I play softer if I want them to be heard. I look at them if that's needed. These, none of these things were happening when I was, you know, my older self. So, and it's a lot of little things that happen. But I think also the feedback that came back from other people after writing about my experience and, you know, hitting middle age and, you know, having teenage kids, all the things that I'm now writing about, I think now we communicate, me and my peers, and, you know, people that come see the music.
Following the cash, go with the man.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Anders Osborne. You may have touched on this a little bit earlier in the interview, but from my understanding, there was a fairly recent time where you saw, to quote you from another interview, less dusk and darkness and a little more sunlight in your own writing. Mm. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
Again, maybe that refers back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, getting sober.
Yeah, I think there's a combination of things. You know, the first, like getting sober in your 40s, like I did, you know, you're not really familiar, or I wasn't very familiar with, you know, who I was. I didn't know the proper response to a lot of things. I wasn't really that sophisticated socially, you know, because I had self-medicated for so long. So I think in the beginning, there's a lot of searching. And maybe it was darkness, but I don't know how much darkness there was in the beginning of that writing process. But confusion, searching and analyzing, observing, you know, myself in relationship to other people and so forth. After a while, you start to realize that you're not backing away from the fire of addiction. You've turned around and you're looking for a new direction. So the fire's behind you and you go, and I think that's probably what I meant, which is now I'm looking at, okay, what are we doing next? So the songwriting has more hope in it, has more of a forward movement, more of a, you know, if I'm angry, it's clear. It's not, I'm sorry, I'm angry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see, yeah.
It's not so self-deprecating you know, excuse me if I raise my voice. Because there's a lot of that in the beginning because you've done so much wrong, you feel, right?
Interesting.
And you also have. So I think once you get past that and you start to step up to the plate and you start to be a little bit more in charge of your own fate, I think that's what the songs are talking about.
Anders, I wanted to talk to you about the touring because you're a warrior. You're a true road warrior from what I understand and from what I've seen on your schedule and what I've seen over the years. And am I correct? You've got other projects as well, like the Stanton Moore Trio. Stanton's been on the program before and love talking with him. Talk about what keeps you going on the road and why you find yourself pulled to playing so much.
I think it's financial.
Again, yeah. Well,
it's very simple. There's not really a goal. There's 13 people that work with me that need to get paid. So a lot of times, you know, we figure out ways to go out there. Either that or it's old debt that I got to get rid of, or it's, you know, IRS, and then you get rid of that. And so I don't think there's too much of a grand plan or a desire to be out here. I think, honestly, at 51, I'd like to see a couple of months cut off, a little bit less would be great. It's wearing me out. But I think once you get to a place where you have a good band and if you have a crew that you like and there's no bickering, there's no negativity, you get rid of all that stuff, then the road's pretty easy, except for flying.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think the drive is the songwriting, because the songwriting is something I do, I'd say almost every day I write something. And that means that you get sort of pulled towards, hey, you want to hear my song? You know, I play it for my kids, I play it for my wife, and I say, what do you think of this? And then I post a little bit, like a verse and a chorus on Instagram. It's been a thing.
I saw that on Facebook, I think.
Yeah.
Beautiful tune. I'm trying to remember the name of it. There's a recent post she put up.
Okay.
A solo acoustic thing.
Yeah. So I've been doing that. And that's that, I wouldn't say need, but there's something that draws me towards connecting with people, saying, hey, here's my observation. Here's what I wrote. What do you guys think? And I think that is the, probably just on a primitive level, that's why you go out and play. Now, the end result is making money to pay the bills. So there are times when, you know, we're out here, so you got to pay the bills. But I think the initial drive is to present and perfect the moment of performance. it's a little bit like a living organism. From the first time, you know, in first grade when you're playing at the end of school on Friday before everybody goes on the weekend, I remember we were allowed to do something in front of the class. And I'm like, so I brought my drum kit and just banged on the drums and sang.
Wow.
So why did I do that?
Uh-huh.
So that's probably why I'm still doing that. Like, look what I can do.
Yeah, I love it.
And you want to perfect that show, you know what I mean? You want to make it right. That's half the tweak. You try a different band, a different this, a different repertoire, change up the songs, heavy, light, acoustic, anything to keep it fresh and inspiring, which is what people are paying to see, something inspiring.
Yeah.
Am I right?
I think you're right. AndersOsborne.com is the name of the website where you can go to and find out more about what Anders is up to in his music, in his life, and all things Anders Osborne. Thank you so much for making time to be a guest on Musician Spotlight and getting a chance to talk shop with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it, John.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Anders Osborne. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Special thanks to the River City Roots Festival for this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.